Today's program has been brought to you by Hearst Ranch, the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. For more information, visit HearstRanch.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey America, I'm Chad Pagano, former Army sniper, chef instructor at the Institute of Culinary Education, and an avid lifelong hunter, and you're about to experience the wild game domain from the hunt to the hearth, airing live on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm joined today, he's back, my co-host, Chris Gesualdi. Welcome back, brother.
Thank you, Chad.
I'm glad you can make it. Chris was on a morning rotation working at the culinary school, so he wasn't with us for a few weeks. I'm glad to have you back, especially today, because I'm very excited to introduce Lou Andronico of the new hit series Chasing Tail that can be found on the History Channel, airing on Thursdays at 10 o'clock. Welcome aboard, Lou.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
No, I appreciate you coming on with us. I was looking forward to this interview for a long time. I've been watching the show. I got to tell you, I love it so far.
Good.
Just to, you know, more so the interaction you guys have, you know, in your little barn camp you guys have, your hunting camp up there. I love the interaction you guys have.
It gets silly sometimes.
It does.
I think the camera crews, I think they amplify a lot of the personalities, that's for sure.
Okay, and we want to get to that, but my producer was telling me on a little pre-interview with you, you had an interesting story about how the show came about. I was wondering how an average bow hunter, you know, you just seem to me a lot like myself, just average guy, like to go out, you know, hunt bow hunting, and then you end up with a hit reality show on the History Channel. How does that happen?
It was actually, it's pretty wild. My cousin, Peter Vandal, is a film student, and he went to school in Manhattan at the School of Visual Arts. And for his thesis project, he didn't know what to do, so we all kind of were bouncing around different ideas, and we said, why don't you, me, Mike and I had said to him, Pete, why don't you come out with us, climb up in a tree with a video camera and see what you can't get on film? And he did for hundreds and hundreds of hours. It was just, it was a kind of obnoxious at first. And he cut it together. He's really talented. He's really talented, and he does a lot of stuff, comedy shows that are character-driven comedy shows. So this was right up his alley, and he cut it together, sent it over to Left Field Pictures. And I know you guys know of Left Field. They do Pawn Stars and American Restoration. And,
sure.
And he spoke with them. They took it on. They shot a pilot. They went to the History Channel, and A&E as well is airing it. But they aired it, and it took off. So far, so good.
Wow, that's great.
It was a real strange start, that's for sure.
Now, your cousin, is he still working with you on the show at all, or he's out on his own
yeah.
now?
No, absolutely. He's with us every day, whether he's in a tree or he's doing the behind-the-scenes stuff or whatever exactly he's doing, but he's definitely still part of the show. You can see his website at www.petervandal.com. He's got a lot of different things that he's done online there.
All right, that's cool. I'm going to check that out, which that brings me into my next question, which I wanted to know about the kind of the scheduling and the setup for these hunts. You know, as a bow hunter, I know I put a lot of effort into, you know, the prepping for a hunt, scent control, you know, my route to the tree, hanging my trees, the whole thing, the scouting. How is that affected by, you know, a cameraman, maybe a cousin, or just the production overall of the show? How is the hunting affected?
we had some issues. There was a cameraman that went up in a tree with me in the dark, and it was fine. It was his first hunt. He was a little squeamish. He got about four steps up in the tree, and he wanted to film the hunt from 3 feet off the ground, which didn't work. So I talked him up into the tree. It was great. It was dark. The sun came up. He saw the ground and how far it was, 18 feet off the ground, and he froze.
Nice. Dad. Nice.
Froze. And, you know, the hunt was, you know, uneventful, and it took me an hour and a half to talk this grown man out of the tree. And when he got down, he kissed the ground.
That's
he said, that's it. I'm done.
Now, see, to me, I would think you would practice. You know you got to climb, you know, 20 feet in a tree. You might want to, you know, get a head start on that. Wow, that's awesome. Now, other than that, are there different cameramen? I mean, do you feel better working with your cousin or a certain guy when you go up? Do you feel, you know, I know I'm a real loner when I go out. You know, I'm part of a club. I like to, you know, when we're at the camp, I like to fool around. But when I'm out in the woods, I don't want to see anybody. So I have this, I'm really fascinated by a guy sitting 2 feet from you filming your hunt.
You know, It was tough. I mean, Peter had, before the show took off, Peter had 2 years of doing this with us. So he had a lot of time in the tree to where he knew when I move, you move kind of thing. And it was, so he was good. He was really good. And then when left field sent their guys up, which were fantastic. I mean, these guys were a fine-tuned running machine for sure. But when you brought them up in a tree, right from New York City up into a tree,
right,
it was a little tricky. I had two smoker bucks get busted out from underneath me because the cameraman bent over, grabbed the camera. There goes one. And then there was another one where he hoisted it up onto his shoulder and said, "Go!" And when he did, that deer turned, looked at us, and did a backflip and took off.
Of course, right. Right, that's what I was getting at. That's what I wanted to hear, that the cameraman blew a hunt for you. I figured much. Okay, now, so you've been hunting for a while, I assume. You're on a TV show. When did you get your start in bow hunting or hunting in general, you know, as far as rifles, any other kind of hunting? Do you enjoy the outdoors, being out turkey hunting, duck hunting, anything else?
I've never hunted turkey or duck. I'd love to. I started deer hunting when I grew up in northern Vermont. It was probably eighth grade. My mother would get my report card, and if it was satisfactory, she'd let me go to camp. If it wasn't, then I stayed home. It was one of those deals.
Did you stay home a lot, or did you get to go to camp a lot, Lou?
I stayed home some. I can't say I hadn't, but I did stay home
okay.
some. But it was probably, I rifle hunted in Vermont for quite some time, and I started bow hunting a few years ago. So I don't have a decade in bow hunting by any means, but it's a different sport altogether. I love it.
Now, oh, absolutely. You know, my background, just so you know, I was an Army sniper. I grew up rifle hunting. And I realized one day it just wasn't challenging anymore. I wasn't getting that adrenaline push anymore. I had always pushed off bow hunting. My family bow hunts. I never got into it. And I decided, you know what? I'm going to pick up the bow. And that what, you know, just the excitement, the in-close experience with the deer is what drove me to bow hunt. And I'll never go back now. I mean, bow hunting, you know, I apply myself to bow hunting 100%. Now, you were saying, So Mike, who is also on the show, that's your other cousin. That's another cousin of yours, Mike Andronico?
Yeah.
And there's Dave Andronico.
Right.
And they're both cousins?
Yeah, we're second cousins.
Did you grow up hunting with these guys?
I'm sorry?
Did you grow up hunting with those guys, or they kind of...
I did. Not Dave. Dave doesn't hunt. He's more the keeper. But Mike has been an avid hunter since I remember. I mean, my earliest memories of going to Mike's house. There was a small camp on the outskirts of Mike's town in Benson, Vermont, where he lives, and he would run me through the woods, sit me up, and then try to stir some things up around me. So he was probably one of my first hunting partners anyways, rifle hunting. And he actually got me in Connecticut. He called me down to Connecticut and said, "Hey, I need some help. The deer down here, I've got some people that I need to remove the deer off their properties and, you know, come down here, but you're not going to bring any junk equipment. I need you to come down here with some decent equipment." So I had to make an investment, and I headed down, and it's been kind of history since then.
History, no pun intended, huh?
No pun intended, that's right.
Okay, which brings us to, you know, this hunting in Connecticut. When I was watching the show, there's a lot of parallels. I hunt a lot in New York. I hunt out on Long Island. And, you know, in a relatively populated area, one of my stands, I could, you know, I see a house from where I am, and I deal with some of the same stuff you guys were putting up with or put up with, you know, as far as people walking through, families on walks, things like that.
Yeah, right.
You know, how does that play into your strategy? I mean, is it a consideration? Do you do, you know, do you look at aerial maps of the properties? Do you try to look for deer funnels based on the population, houses, and, you know, car traffic? Well, how does that all play into, you know, your daily hunting up there in Connecticut?
We've got internet service. It's spotty, but we got service, and we go onto Google Earth and we try to figure out, you know, where what would be perfect. You know, some of the state-owned properties we can't hunt on, or there's selected hunters that can only hunt on there, and so we try to hunt in those areas where there's not a lot of activity of other hunters. and bottlenecks, a lot of funnels. We try to target a lot of funnels, and then Mike will go out and wrap on doors to try to target and market, if you will, to those houses that are in that area. So we use that a lot of times. And a lot of times, Chad, we just, you know, you go into the soda, or you go into the store to grab a soda, and a lady will come up to you and give her name and number to you and say, please, come to my house. Enough is enough with these deer. I mean, they're just, my son's got tick or has Lyme disease. And can you come remove? And then it kind of grows from there. She tells her neighbors, and then her neighbors tell their friends. And then it kind of grows like that. But a lot of times we don't necessarily target specific areas. Sometimes we do, but sometimes it's also just word of mouth.
Right, so you're networking, and I'm sure the show helps with that these days now. I'm sure you guys are getting calls from people, hey, come and remove the deer.
Yeah, we have. We've gotten a lot of different, you know, the social media things have lit up on that. And a lot of people, a lot, probably a dozen people in our zone that we hunt in have said, hey, come to my place if you want to. And sometimes these people say, come to my house and hunt. And we went to a number of different places, and it's a huge acre and a half, beautiful manicured carpet for a lawn,
right,
and one tree. And they want us to get up into one tree and try to remove these deer. And it's just, I mean, it's impossible, obviously. There's nothing to hunt.
We're in Connecticut.
It's Fairfield County, New Canaan, Connecticut.
Yeah, I'm from Danbury. We got a lot of deer up there. Sounds almost like the Gator Boys when they call you guys. You ever see that?
The Gator Boys. Yeah, I've seen that show. Yeah. Not necessarily exterminists, but exterminators. But, yeah, it is like that. We do get a lot of phone calls.
So now, in Connecticut, I was watching a show, and you have this thing, Earn a Buck, which apparently, you know, they're trying to cull the doe population. So you have to take, what, three does?
Yeah, every third doe that you shoot, every third doe that you register, you get a replacement tag, and then you get another buck tag. Or you don't register your three doe, and you're done for the season. And you don't need to go to a checking station and get a replacement tag. If you do choose to register and get a replacement tag, after your third doe, you get an earn a buck tag, it's called, and it's just another buck tag. When you buy your licenses, you get three doe, two buck, and then a January buck, which either you use it or lose it in January the following year.
Okay.
And then you can earn a buck throughout your normal season as you hunt along.
Okay, so that sounds very familiar. So you're going to like a DEC check station to have your doe inspected?
Yep, they take a look at it, they tag it, register it. You know, a lot of times, I know in Vermont, they'll pull a tooth for the biologist to do some research on and things.
Right.
They don't do that, or they haven't done that with any of my deer, and they don't weigh them either. I'm surprised that they don't weigh them. But we got a scale at camp that we weigh them anyways for bracken rights.
Yeah, no, I noticed that. So, which that brings me to the whole relationship and the kind of the interaction you guys have at your camp there. You know, they refer to you as the young buck, you know, of the guy, I guess, based on your age, maybe hunting experience, so, you know, how is that? I mean, them kind of riding you a little bit at the camp, and really, is there any retaliation? Do you come back at them? How's the overall relationship with those guys?
The relationship is good. You almost get immune to it. You got to have some thick skin with these guys. You know, Johnny is—he doesn't talk much, but when he does, you kind of got to listen. So
that's
when he starts
John
to razz
Bassett.
You a little bit, it doesn't carry a lot of merit. Then Mike never stops, anyways. He's out of his mind, and he never stops razzing. So that's kind of water under the bridge. Arky is Arky, and there's nothing that you can do to please the guy. So knowing that's half the battle. You know, you go into camp and you realize no matter what you do, you set the stand, and if it's not angled just right, then forget about it. You're going to hear about it. Or, you know, if you don't put the bow hook in just right or at the right level, I mean, it's just nuts. You can't help them. So, but it's not bad. I mean, these guys, at the end of the day, they're there to help you recover deer if you need help. And they're, you know, we're all out for the same thing, and it's deer camp, so what's deer camp if someone doesn't take the brunt of it?
Exactly. So we have the earn a buck, and then what are your overall feelings towards trophy hunters? I know the episode I was watching of the show, you know, they were kind of busting on you a little bit about the size of some of your bucks, and you hadn't had a big buck, what they considered a trophy yet. And in the episode, I think you got the trophy. You got a nice 10 or maybe an 8, big 8 or something in the episode. You know, what are your feelings overall about trophy hunting versus, you know, what we call, you know, just meat hunting, the conservation, you know, the idea of loving eating venison? Who cares? If it's brown, it's down, and I'm going to eat it.
Sure. What I try to do, and what a lot of the guys try to do there, is when we're there to hunt, we're there to remove deer and to curb the population. And, you know, Mike distributes a lot of the deer to the homeless and some families. And I do the same for some families that aren't so well off here in New Hampshire. So that's one part of it. But when the rut is on, Chad, we're hunting horn. Right. And when the rut is on, we're shooting bucks. We'll let some of the does go. And we shift gears, like on any job. And we'll let some of the does go. And certainly the younger deer, we always let go. But when the rut is on, we're shooting bucks, big bucks. And that's kind of our time. That's our payment. We don't get paid for this, certainly. But that's our payment, is to try to kill something that we can put on the wall when the rut is on. And then after that, we do what the landowners want. Because when you get permission to hunt on a property and you don't remove deer, they watch you. They right. watch you hunt. They watch you come and go. And if you're not removing deer, they pull your permission. And they say, well, you're not performing.
Right.
So, and that happens a lot. So whether, you know, you're down there to trophy hunt or not, you still need to cull the herd. So it's kind of a two-part situation that we've got going on there.
Right. Now, how long is the season up there in Connecticut? When do you guys start?
September 15th, October, November, December, and then you buy your tags for the following year, and you can hunt for through January.
Wow, that's a long season. That's great.
It is.
Listen, we're going to take a short break here. Can you stay with us for a little bit longer, Lou?
Sure.
We're going to take a real short break here, and we'll be right back with Lou Andronico of Chasing Tail. You're listening to the Wild Game Domain on Heritage Radio Network.
This song you're listening to right now is Top Gun by Tom Cruise on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, pasture-raised on 150,000 acres in Central California. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, free-range, sustainably produced, humane. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, the authentic flavor of the American West.
Hey, welcome back. I'm your host, Chad Pagano. We're here with Chris Jeswaldi and my special guest, Lou Andronico of History Channel's Chasing Tail. Welcome back, Lou.
Welcome. Thank you.
All right. You ready for the, I call this the goofy question section of our show, and this is when I start asking you things like, what is your ultimate dream hunt?
My ultimate dream hunt. Boy, that's a...
You know, the whole thing. I need when, where, the weather. Give me the dream hunt.
I'd like to go to Louisiana with the swamp people and shoot alligators out of the boat. That's what I'd love to do. That would be a dream hunt.
With a bow? You ever see that? They bow hunt those gators down there, too.
Do they really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. They have, like, cool. The fishing rig, you know, and they hit the gator and they kind of fish it in. You know, they pull it in with the rope or whatever they have attached. I don't know exactly how it works.
See, Chad,
wow.
I would definitely do that.
I didn't know that. I know they shoot them there. I've seen the show, and I haven't seen anything with bows related to it. But I always thought that would be a great. You see them sometimes 50 yards, they say, off the bow of the boat, and they're shooting. And I said, boy, I can make that shot with an arrow.
Yeah,
I could do that. That would be a dream hunt, I'd say.
Okay. You know, my buddy's jumping in here, my co-host, Chris Jeswaldi. I got to give you a little background on my friend Hazy. He's one of the best chefs I know. This guy prepare anything, venison, elk, duck, you name it, alligator, he'll make it delicious. He refuses to go out and kill an animal, which bothers me on some levels because as hunters, you know, I respect the animal. I have more respect for the guy who wants to go out there, harvest the animal, prepare it himself. Go. He's smiling because I'm throwing him under the bus a little bit. You know, he wants it shipped in a bag to his restaurant so he could just go ahead and cook it up. He doesn't want to do any of the dirty work. You know, And so that's where he comes from, which leads into my next question. Your favorite game meat? You know, I'm imagining venison. Do you have any real special preparation up there? You guys do? Do you like preparing it in a certain way? Do you like a certain cut of the deer? What's your favorite way to go there?
At camp, it's pretty down and dirty, so it's on that hot top that we have, you see in the show.
Right.
So it's kind of steaks and tenderloin. We don't really prepare it. There's no real marinade. It's kind of sparse living there, so we kind of keep it simple. But when I'm home, venison roast is really good, like a garlic roast in a crock pot with a venison roast. Tenderloin and bacon is delicious. Oh, tenderloin, yeah. Medallions wrapped in bacon, that's always really good.
Oh, yeah. Chris, as the chef, you got anything to add there?
Oh, it sounds good. I'm just imagining myself that guy that won't come down from the tree also. And you Chad taking shots at me.
Lou, we got to put this guy in a blind or something. He's not going 20 feet up in the air to kill animals.
Yeah, right.
All right, so the next goofy question. You ready?
What do you got?
Not including your bow, the most important piece of equipment to you on any hunt.
Most important equipment.
Yeah, other outside
than my
of your
harness,
bow.
Obviously, my bow, I'd say, would probably be my rangefinder. I'd have to say my rangefinder. I shoot with a one-pin system, so I don't necessarily need to know inside of 30 yards where the animal is. But I've had a lot of trophy bucks come in I'd love to harvest, and they were just outside my comfort zone. And I've ranged them and qualified that and said, nope, they're a little too far, or ranged them and said, boy, I could do that. So I'd say that, you know, the rangefinder probably is right up there as far as the favorite equipment, pieces of equipment.
And what kind of rangefinder do you use, Liv?
I use a Bushnell rangefinder. I believe it's a Bushnell. Yeah. I got it right here. I'm shooting my bow now.
Yeah, me too. That's the standard. I like that answer. Me too. I feel the same way. Because it's all about ethics. It's about making sure you can make that shot, making a clean shot on the deer and taking them down, you know, as quickly as possible. The range definitely comes in handy there. We have a lot of listeners here. As you know, we're in Bushwick, Brooklyn, not a big hunting crowd down here. And we're, you know, reaching out across the country, of course. But I'm always trying to get more hunters, get more people, recruit people into the sport. So what advice do you have for anybody out there who's kind of on the fence? I did a show a couple of weeks ago, how to get into hunting and, you know, kind of what you needed to take the first couple of steps. But what advice would you give to somebody who maybe is already rifle hunting or fooling around with it a little bit, wants to get into bow hunting, or someone who's never really hunted at all and wants to jump into the game?
Practice shooting. You know, shoot with your buddies. It's a great pastime. It's cheap. Once you get your arrows, it's a cheap pastime as well. And it's also not even about hunting. It is about harvesting animals, and it's about, you know, the thrill of why we do it as far as hunters go. But that's a tiny fraction of what happens in a tree, whether you're in the suburbs or you're in the deep deer woods of Vermont or Maine. You know, I love being in a tree and having the morning sun come up on chilly mornings when I'm freezing. It's great to get the morning sun in your face. Or when the sun sets and how the woods come alive and all of a sudden it's dark. In 15 minutes, you know, there's no shooting light left. And sometimes I just hang out in the tree for, you know, an hour after I can't even hunt anymore just to kind of absorb what's going on around me.
Right. It's the... Yeah, I talk about that all the time, and I'm not an overly spiritual person, but it kind of resets me just being out there in the woods. You know, it's not about so much killing the animal. It's about, you know, becoming one with nature and being out there and enjoying the freedom of it.
Sure, and it's quiet. Everything is quiet. My cell phone is certainly off. And it's a different, it's kind of like scuba diving, you know, it's a different world that you're not in every day. Scuba diving, you're completely silent. It's like being in a tree. It's a cheap recreational sport, other than the hunting end of things, you know?
Right. No, I love that answer. That's a great answer, Lou. So what else can we expect on the show? How much long is the show running now? Are you guys renewed? How does that whole, you know, showbiz thing work now? Because obviously, you know, just to put it in perspective, I'm sorry to interrupt you. The season's over, you know, that season passed, right? That was last hunting season. And we're already gearing up. I'm already scouting for next season. I imagine you guys are preparing already for next season. Are you guys renewed? Are we going to have the show again? Do you have enough footage for next season?
It's really up in the air. And we're all kind of got our fingers crossed based on the ratings to see, you know, how the ratings are going to come in. So we're really... No, we're not renewed yet for season two. There hasn't been any real negotiations or even any talks about season two. I think everybody's kind of holding off to see where the ratings are going to fall and to see who's going to invest and who's not going to invest. And the Twitter, to see what kind of followings we get. So there is no season two as of yet, but there is still, I bet there's 1,000 hours of footage that Pete Vandal put together, and just shot. So they've got that in the can. So if season two did pick up, there would be some crazy stuff that they've got already in the can that they could use for season two. I hope they do. It would be a lot of fun watching that season.
Absolutely. I mean, just to see something that I love to do on the History Channel is a great feeling for me, you know, that the sport, hopefully, you know, it helps promote the sport and mm-hmm. you know, just get it out there. And I think, you know, it was funny, I was talking to someone and they were kind of saying, well, you having Lou on? Yeah, watch that show. He's another hunter. And he said, I was watching that show. And you know, do you think it's good for hunting? Do you really think it's good for hunting? And I said, yeah, no, I do think it's good for hunting because, you know what, I see you guys having fun at the camp, right? Just like all men will do when they're at a hunting camp. There's nothing, you're not lying about anything there. And then I see complete responsibility in the tree stand and the harvesting of these animals, and you guys bend over backwards to go out and find these animals after you shoot them.
Sure.
So I don't know what else, you know, people could expect from a bunch of guys hunting in Connecticut than what you guys are doing. I think you guys are doing a great job of promoting the sport.
And I appreciate it. And it's funny because we've got a following of ladies. And that was a demographic, or that was a group of people that we weren't targeting. But there's a huge following of ladies that hunt and that don't hunt. And they're more tuned into the interaction with the characters and the silliness and the different things that go on. So that's kind of that was really refreshing because we didn't really go for that.
Well, you know what it is, Lou, it's you, man. You're so handsome. It's gotta be you.
Take that back.
It's not Arky. We know that.
What about Johnny?
Johnny's a good looking guy.
My boy Johnny.
All right. And Mike's not a bad looking guy either, but I know it's not Arky attracting the women to that show.
Yeah, I'd have to agree to that one. That's for sure.
Well, listen, Lou, it's been great having you on the show. I really appreciate you doing it. I hope you'll come back with us and do another show.
Yeah, anytime.
It was great talking to you. And I know, you know, I think, you know, there was some skepticism maybe from your side of things about what we were doing down here in Brooklyn. I think people hear Bushwick, Brooklyn, they think, you know, we're maybe anti-hunters, we're tricking people. Let me tell you, there's a big group of us down here who support conservation, wild animals, sustainable way of living, going out and doing it, you know, yourself. And we respect and appreciate what you guys are doing up there in Connecticut.
I appreciate it. Can I ask your viewers to maybe follow me on Twitter?
Please.
It's Lou, at Lou Chasing Tail. There's quite a group of people that are following me. It's always interesting to see the different people and what they do and how they do it and what they think of the show. It's really interesting, actually. It's all kind of new to me, the social media. Wasn't something that I got into a lot until the show popped up.
Right, and so the listeners know that's how I met Lou. We were both on Twitter, and somehow I'm new to Twitter myself, and somehow we interacted, sent a message. I figured I'd ask him on, and Lou graciously accepted my invitation. So if you're not on Twitter, get on Twitter. Start following Lou. And get involved, especially if you're a hunter. There's a huge network out there that you have at your disposal. What about websites or anything like that, Lou? Do you have anything else?
What was that? Were you talking to me?
Yeah, do you have any websites or anything else? What else can we do to promote the show or you? I know the History Channel website does a good job.
Yeah, the History Channel does a great job. A&E aired on A&E 2 nights ago. That would be great if there was... You know, maybe a shout out to them. And then, of course, PeterVandal.com with two L's is the creator of the whole avalanche that he had started here. But yeah, that's pretty much it. I mean, there's a lot of people that hunt, and I never thought ever growing up in Vermont and now living in southern New Hampshire that there was such a network of people that hunt, and especially bow hunt. It's a real eye opener.
Right. When can I get you down to Long Island, Luke? You come out and do some bow hunting out on Long Island with me.
Oh, anytime. Anytime. It's hard to refuse getting up into a tree stand, that's for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe we'll get you into some bird hunting down there. I do a lot of pheasant hunting out on the island. We'll get you down there with the shotgun.
That would be fun. My father was a big bird hunter. That'd be fun.
All right, cool. Well, Lou, thank you very much. I appreciate you being with us today.
Thank you, guys. Thanks again.
All right. Well, that's all the time we have today. I want to thank Chris Gesualdi for showing up today. My man, best host we have on this show. I want to thank Jack for producing and engineering today's show. And of course, I want to thank Lou Andronico for being with us today. You can listen to the Wild Game Domain on heritageradionetwork.org or on iTunes as a podcast. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening. It's the night.